Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
We're going to have Mom light the Shabbat candles. And then while she's doing that, if we could have the Ubetas discuss the weight of remembrance and what that kind of stirred up for you guys this week.
So I'll just kind of speak for both of us. Obviously, when we left last week, Zoe took it. And I know that Zoe will share here in just a little bit. But when Dad gave that directive last week of the shared responsibility of carrying the weight of Remy, there had been a word that Yahweh had given us that had been stirring, that we felt like we needed to carry it. And so whenever he released that, Yahweh just was kind of connecting some dots and was basically just saying that you are to carry it until. So we are not there yet, and so we're not going to be passing it because he's asked us to carry it until.
They don't submit to me.
Okay. I'm sharing about my time with Remy now. I was told that I can't only look at my phone, so I will try to make periodic eye contact with you. So, the first time I grabbed Remy, what was, like, in, like, me as a person, not my family, I exchanged death for joy. So, in the past couple of weeks, I have noticed that, death has come back, but in a different way. So originally it was like literally like a fight for my life. So like if I didn't do this, I would die. And now I'm working through the effects of living with death since I was like 6. So I realized that I pick up death in a lot of aspects of my life, and one of them that was being highlighted was like in relationships. So that like fear would be brought up in me and I would immediately kill something. So I was noticing, and it was being pointed out to me, that I was letting death back in. So, and I'm just gonna like preface with the Sunday family meeting that it was a really, or family gathering, I don't know. I was reminded of the cost of death, and that my life, I was supposed to be dead at 19. Like that. I've said that a lot. We know that one. I carried death to a point where I would have died. And I got here and I continued to like pick it up and keep it. So Yahweh told me if I didn't put it down, then that would be multiplied in my generations. And my firstborn would be dead at 7. And I knew that, and I still carried death. So I had to face that knowing the cost of something doesn't immediately fix it, even if the cost means everything to you. Because I had to do the action of putting it down. Like, there had to be action behind everything I had in me. So I just, like, another thing that I was reminded of at that meeting is that for me, how I have been introduced to life is through this family, and that Nana and Padrino have carried life on my behalf and on behalf of all of us. So when I first picked up Remy last week, I don't know if you noticed, but I like immediately was in joy. So I got that exchange for joy. And so now my press is that I need to be able to walk in joy without Remy. Like, Remy is a tangible reminder of what Yahweh can do in your life. And if you are reliant on tangible reminders, mm-hmm. then you will get nowhere unless yeah. you have a tangible reminder. So, I was being pressed in not, like, carrying Remy without carrying Remy, because Remy is Yahweh, so, like, I need to carry Yahweh. So, practically, I did not end up with Remy. I was met after service with Amber and Jay, and they said, "You have to give me Remy." And I said, "No." And then I got this look. And then I was like, "Okay." But I need Remy. So Amber looked at me and she said, "I take Remy now, or you give me Remy at Shabbat." So I decided to give her Remy at Shabbat. I had to get that last little bit of death out of me. Because little did they know, on Shabbat, if I hadn't gotten that last little bit of death out of me, that I would have said no or not given my full yes to a process that I would like Cutter to come up and help me present to the family.
I just wanted to go back to relationships, and I personally can attest to this because I have been in an old system of dating, and that was only bringing death to my life. I was literally dying in the old system. But Yahweh brought me out of that and brought me to life, and He's also brought me Zoe through the Eliezer Spirit, and we have committed to the process, and we're pretty excited. We wanted to share that with you all in person. And we always want to honor our foundation to Mom and Dad. Thank you. And then also those who have gone before us, Jalen and Anya. Let's do it. Yeah. Maybe I'm excited.
Zoe was afraid she was just going to get up here and smile. That was some life coming out of that mouth.
Yes, for sure.
And Cutter, we appreciate your vulnerability talking about your past and where He's brought yeah. you, because it's a huge yeah. testimony for the next generation and the generations before you
yeah.
To be bold and okay that there's actually another system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And if anyone is like, what's that? What is that? Yes, we're in Exodus, but don't forget about Genesis 24. So yeah. if you need a reminder, when they talk about the Eliezer Spirit and the yeah. process, there is a blueprint in the Word that is line by line on how to walk it out, and how to apply it. And it's in Genesis 24. So even down to this is the coolest thing. Zoe has this thing where she wants to title the things. So as we know that in Hebraic culture, we believe that you can find compatibility in who you are supposed to be with if Yahweh's at the center within 3 dates. And so when we talk about them getting the process that they're in right now, she gave her yes, and they are going to be engaging in the next couple of weeks where they're going to be having specific dates with the other person's closest people, because this is the process in Genesis 24 where they are on camels and they're walking back to the house, and Rivka is getting to know about the son through Eliezer. So the process in this, and so she called him a couple different things, but her camel meetings. So if you get a call, to have a camel meeting, I'm like, God, love it. We were so focused on trying to figure out what we were supposed to be doing, we didn't get to do the title. So I love it.
The
camel meeting. So that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to be in that process during Hanukkah. So anyway, so just to be this whole family hovering, watching over, and being a part of it, letting them share and talk and be with them and stuff. So
amen.
I'm personally just thank you. It's been I'm 6 months overdue, and it's been my back hurts. So when Cutter came to me last Thursday, I was like, okay, all right, now it's time to blow up.
Well, I think that's a good segue into getting into the Torah portion and everything that's been said tonight. You know, everybody's already said it, attention to detail, specifics, and just to take it a step further and add to that, that Yahweh, that is his character. He's a God of detail.
Yeah.
Yahweh has, his character is attention to detail and specificity and precision. And when you think about even what they just said in the process that they're engaging in, which is opposite of what the world has to offer, there is a pattern that's laid out that is very specific, that requires attention to detail, and it puts you in a place where you know your place.
Yep.
It actually gives boundaries and safeguards to where you do know your place, so that it sets you on a trajectory to be in a certain place that's in proper order as well. And so that's a lot of what we need to consider, because when you think about, when you talk about the definition of attention to detail, it says the ability to focus on all aspects of a task, no matter how small, ensuring thoroughness and accuracy by carefully considering every detail when completing that task. And I want us to just kind of posture ourselves that is the way Yahweh is, and we're going to see that in this Torah portion, that it isn't, Yahweh's not thoughtless.
Yeah.
He's not neglectful, irresponsible, careless, forgetful. Like, he's not vague about what it is that he wants us to do.
Yeah.
And as everybody was talking, I was just sitting here thinking about everything that happened today, and how amazing the family was to just totally mobilize in looking for Rena, which we had no clue where she was at. And we have had countless conversations with Rena. First, don't miss the bus. Don't miss the bus. But if you miss the bus, we want you to sit right here on the stairs in front of the school. If you can't do that, or if you miss the bus, you go back in the office, you make a phone call. If the office is closed, you go to the Maverick, right? We're requiring attention to detail of her. And today, she threw all of that out the window.
Back to the steps.
Right. I mean, we laid out the steps of what to do and how to get a hold of us, right? And laid out that attention to detail. And I was just thinking about how today is just a good example of when you're careless or neglectful, or you set attention to detail to the side, or you think, and I'm talking about us, if we think these things are irrelevant or we're complacent about those things, or we count them off as silly, then you're, we will find ourselves nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and when I, as you know, I can kind of understand his heart of concern, of course, and grief for where we might be. But then when he does find you, like, I wanted to rip Brenna's head off, and I did. And I scared the little girl of the apartment that she was at, because I was standing in this apartment complex going off on my daughter because she did not pay attention to detail. Right? That was the whole root of the problem. And so...
And then Holy Spirit...
What? I don't think the Holy Spirit was involved in all that.
I'm just saying that then you brought her home, and then I just held her.
Yeah. But it just, it's just interesting
There's
to think about that.
There's multiple aspects when you're lost.
Sure.
But this Torah portion, we get to see the character of Yahweh in how much attention he gives to the details and the specificity and the precision of how he wants us to go about certain things in our life. And I think a lot of times we can just write things off as, yeah, I don't need to do all that. Or why do I need to worry about all that? How, what does this have to do with me? And all of it has to do with you. And we need to pay attention to all of it. And so if his character is to pay attention to detail, then we should do what we see our Father doing,
right.
And we should strive to pay attention to detail.
Yeah.
So when it comes to patterns or blueprints, like we're going to see in this Torah portion, like we saw in Genesis 24 with the process of finding somebody that you're going to spend the rest of your life with, we should pay attention to those patterns and blueprints, because Yahweh pays attention to details, and that's why he conveys these things, right?
Yeah.
So just wanted to kind of lay that out there as a foundation before Mom gets into this Torah portion, because there's quite a bit.
Adonai spoke to Moshe, saying, "Tell B'nai Israel to take up an offering for me from anyone whose heart compels him. You are to take my offering. These are the contributions which you are to receive from them: gold, silver, and bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet cloth, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins, red dye skin, ram skins dyed red, seal skins, acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and for the sweet incense, onyx stones and setting stones for the ephod and for the breastplate. Have them make a sanctuary for me, so that I may dwell among them. You are to make it precisely according to everything that I show you, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of the furnishings within, just so you must make it. Now they are to make an ark of acacia wood, 2.5 cubits in length, 1.5 cubits wide, and 1.5 cubits high. You are to overlay it with pure gold, inside and out, and to make a crown of gold around it. You are to cast 4 rings of gold for it and place them on its 4 feet. 2 rings will be on one side and 2 rings on the other side. Make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You are to put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark in order to carry the ark. The poles are to remain in the rings of the ark and not be taken from it. You are to put the testimony which I will give you into the ark. Then you are to make an atonement cover of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. Also make 2 cherubim of gold from hammered work at the 2 ends of the atonement cover. Make 1 cherub at 1 end and 1 cherub at the other end of 1 piece. With the atonement cover, you to make cherub, cherubim at its two ends. The cherubim are to spread out their wings above, shielding the atonement cover with their wings, each facing its companion. The two cherubim are to be turned toward the atonement cover. You are to put the atonement cover on top of the ark, and inside the ark you are to put the testimony that I will give you, and I will meet you there. I will speak to you from above the atonement cover, from between the two cherubim that are on the ark of the testimony, about all that I will command you for B'nai Israel. You are to make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long, 1 cubit wide, and 1.5 cubits high. You are to overlay it with pure gold and make a crown of gold around it. Make a border of single hand width wide around it, and a golden crown for the border all around. Make 4 gold rings for it, and put the rings in the 4 corners that they are on its 4 feet. The rings are to be close to the borders as holders for the poles to carry the table. You are to make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold so that the table may be carried with them. You are to make the dishes, pans, jars, and bowls to pour drink offerings from pure gold. Always set the bread of presence at the table before me. You are to make a menorah of pure gold by hammered work. Its base, stem, cups, bulbs, and flowers are to be 1 piece. There are to be 6 branches coming out of the sides, 3 branches of the menorah out of one side, and 3 branches out of the other. There are to be 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms in 1 branch, each with a bulb and a flower, then 3 cups made like almond blossoms on the next branch, each with a bulb and a flower, and so forth, the 6 branches coming out of the menorah. Within the menorah will be 4 cups made with almond blossoms with bulbs and flowers. There is to be a bulb under 2 branches, the first piece, a bulb under 2 branches, and the second piece, a bulb under 2 branches, and the third piece. For the 6 branches coming out of the menorah, their bulbs and their branches are to be 1 piece, all of a single hammered work of pure gold. You are to make the 7 lamps for it, and set the lamps up to shed light over the space before it. The tongs and the censers are to be pure gold. It is to be made from the talent of pure gold with all these pieces. See that you make them according to the pattern being shown to you on this mountain. Moreover, you are to make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine woven linen and blue, purple, and scarlet with cherubim made by the work of skillful craftsmen. The length of each curtain is to be 28 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. All the curtains are to have the same measure. 5 curtains are to be coupled together, one to another, and the other 5 are to be coupled one to another. Also make loops of violet on the edge of 1 curtain that is the outermost in the first set, and do likewise within the edge of the curtain on the outermost on the second set. You are to make 50 loops on the first curtain and 50 loops on the edge of the curtain on the second set. The loops are to be opposite one another. Then make 50 clasps of gold and couple the curtains one to another with clasps so that the tabernacle may be 1 piece. You are to make curtains of goat hair for the tent over the tabernacle, 11 curtains in all. The length of each curtain is to be 30 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. The 11 curtains are to have the same measurement. You are to couple 5 curtains by themselves and 6 curtains by themselves, and double over the 6th curtain on the forefront of the tent. Then make 50 loops on the edge of 1 curtain that is the outermost first set, along with 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is the outermost second set. Make 50 bronze clasps, put them into loops, and couple the tent together so that it may be one. As the overhanging part that remains, the tent curtains, the half curtain that remains is to hang over the back of the tabernacle. The extra cubit on one side, as well as the cubit on the other side, which remains the length of the curtain of the tent, is to hang over the sides of the tabernacle on each side to cover it. You are to make a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red, and a covering of seal skins above. You are to make the framework of boards for the tabernacle from acacia wood standing upright. The length of each board is to be 10 cubits by 1.5 cubits wide. There are to be two supports on each board joined to another. Do this for all the boards of the tabernacle. You are to make 20 boards for the south side of the tabernacle and 40 silver bases underneath the 20 boards. Two bases go underneath one board for its supports, and two bases under another board for its supports. Likewise, the second side of the tabernacle on the north side, there are to be 20 boards with their 40 bases of silver, two bases to go under one board, and two bases to go under the next board. For the back part of the tabernacle westward, you are to make 6 boards. Make 2 boards at the corners of the tabernacle on the back side. They are also to be doubled at the bottom and in the same way joined at the top by the first ring. It is to be this way for them both, and they will provide the 2 corners. So there will be 8 boards with 16 silver bases, 2 bases under each board. Also make cross beams of acacia wood, 5 for the boards on one side of the tabernacle, 5 for the boards on the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 for the boards on the back of the tabernacle to the west. The middle crossbeam in the center of the boards will pass through from end to end. Then overlay the boards with gold and make the rings from gold as holders for the crossbeams, and overlay the crossbeams with gold. You are to raise the tabernacle according to the plan which you were shown on the mountain.
I'll talk it through, but obviously with the way today went, my plan was to kind of finalize the flow and of what was going to be released, and that did not happen. So I don't know now, which I say all the time, but I really, but here's what I will say. When it comes time to the tabernacle, we could choose from now until the rest of our lives become scholars of the tabernacle, and it would still never end. So tonight, honestly, it doesn't matter if I have anything, because I'm not supposed to impress you. I want him to impress you.
Yeah.
But I want to make you hungry enough that you could spend the rest of your life just looking up what 50 clasps mean, because there's 70 layers to just the 50 clasps. So think about each cubit, each base, each acacia wood, gold, poles, curtains, the furniture. You could go 70 layers deep in each of those things, the numbers, the meaning. And so all I'm gonna do, what I really did feel, and hopefully this isn't elementary, but for me, I've always struggled with not really understanding the tabernacle. I've understood the menorah, I've understood the altar of incense, I've understood the veil to some extent. I've heard the words, but I've never taken the time to really visualize and picture. So what I really want to do is I want to convey 2 things tonight. One, I want to be able to very simplistically draw out everything that was just read, to just give a visual so that you're like, what curtain are we on, and which number, and where are those clasps, and what are you talking about the silver base? At least I'm a visual learner, so when I read things, unless I really break it down and I draw it out, even if my drawing is wrong, I can't understand what I'm reading. And so just so you guys know, and maybe you guys have all done this, I had to go through and do this several different times, then go back and read it again for me to even understand what I was reading. Am I way off on that? And I know we've done this with Torah portions before, where we kind of read through and we're like, man, you know, what does that mean? And we just kind of read through it. But then this one, you really, it's like one of those names chapters.
Yes.
You know, where you get through all the generations and you're like, cool. And then you just kind of, and that, at least for me, I've always read through just, well, I don't know what any of this means, but obviously they're wanting to build a tabernacle. And then you just kind of move along. Well, this time, really wanting to sit down and visualize it and read it. So the first thing I just want to foundationally do is just kind of present the picture. The second thing that I want to do is I want to present Yeshua in all of this. So At least that's that we know that the Torah points to him. He is him. He points back to the Torah. So I know that it is without being said, it's obvious that this is a dwelling place for Yahweh. So I want to point to his son in all of these things, because we will then understand what it means when Yeshua says, I am, and talks about those things, what he is. So, and it was already said, I think Eric said it, that obviously we do have the understanding, we've said it over and over and over again, that we are taught that through Yeshua, because it's written on our hearts, that we have become the tabernacle. We are the mobile temporary tabernacle walking on the earth. So if we see, I think, at least three times in this Torah portion where it says, make it according to my pattern. Make it according to what I said. That doesn't go away, because in Hebrews it says it again. They made it as a foreshadow of what was in the heavenlies.
Yeah.
So if his story's not done and there's something coming, there is a pattern in the heavenlies, and we are to mirror it just like the tabernacle. But now if this is gone and we are it, then we are to be made according to the pattern of the heavenlies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why this matters for us. And I want to point to Yeshua, who is us tonight. At least if we can tackle those two goals, then I feel like we've accomplished something. I don't know, I really, and maybe I won't know until I release tonight. I don't know what happens, but I like fell in love with the tabernacle. I think because, and I feel like if there's 70 layers to, let's just say 100 different things, and I'm only scratching the surface on one of the layers on one of the things, for me, I got so much revelation of what he did on the cross that it's making me realize I never knew, which I know I've said that, we've said that the whole time, that, you know, as we study the Torah, because he is the Torah, it's like we're learning who he is.
Yeah.
And so it's understanding this is making me realize what he came for. And it's so much more than a hospital bed.
Yeah.
It's so much more than just a buddy old pal that can help you out. There's so much to it. And I just feel like the appreciation of that just got so deep. So my heart is that would be what we would all just fall in love with tonight. So trying to think of how I want it. Cause you guys should just see mine. I just have one liners. I mean, they're just, I don't even know. There's so much that we could go into today. So let me start off with just a couple things. And I think I'm going to do the practicals and you guys know what I'm talking about as we, go through this. And I want, I'm gonna release a couple things. When I talk about this, the family that brought this to my attention is in here. So it's gonna be fun. But I'll say this. In the old culture, it was taught and released that the devil's in the details. And that shifted real fast in that culture. And I believe that there's going to be a stamp on some things over us if we're still operating.
Yeah.
Not that we believe those things, because I believe that that got broken off of us. But there's something about this Torah portion that's going to finalize that lie.
Mm-hmm.
The devil's in the details.
Come on now.
I don't know how you read that Torah portion and not see that that statement alone is deception.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, the devil's in the details statement is a loophole to not have to operate by his blueprint.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is his way of functioning. It's his way to actually get advancement.
Yeah.
So the way that he advances is by you being simple.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that he's not, you guys have to hear me when I say that. I'm not saying it's not simple, but there, but maybe I am. I believe it's a loophole to be like, meh. Mm-hmm. Or it's a loophole to be like, that stuff doesn't matter. Or, And the reason why I want to hit on this is because we talked about, I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago, but we were really hitting on salvation and that altar call of just let him in your heart.
Yeah.
And there's no intentionality of that's all you have to do. And so then there's that loophole mindset that says the details don't matter. That's where Satan is. Everything is fine. And yet if he dwells in a pattern of heaven, then we have to know the pattern of heaven for him to dwell in.
Yeah.
Which also will give us insight of what it is when we talk about the feast, when we're prophesying something forward.
Yeah.
We can't just whimsically say we're prophesying something forward and not build for something for him to come into.
Right.
So it's in multiple dimensions, right? It's for what's to come, like we were talking about. How can we know our place there, if we don't know our place now, if we don't understand the place then, how do we know the place now? And if you don't know the place now, because it's not about know your place, know his place, essentially is the word. If you don't know your place, then essentially the overarching word is you don't know his place.
Right.
So if you don't know his place, you don't know his place, you're not going to know his place.
Right.
And so there's a pattern, and I don't know if that makes sense, but we've simplified it so much that we've allowed the simplicity of just saying what we talked about last week. It's just relationship and it's fine to then neglect the details and the pattern of heaven that we are to embody and to walk. Let me say this. You can't claim he knows the hairs on my head and want detail in him knowing you.
Yep.
But you don't want detail in you knowing him.
Yep.
We all want him to know every detail of our being, but we won't take a moment to know anything about his details.
Yep.
And he's got some details.
Yep.
Right? I mean, we will preach all day long, claim that, you know, the hairs on, he loves me like the more than the sun. I wonder how many grains of sand. And we'd probably even try to mathematically figure out how many sand pieces, how many of us have been on the beach and thought about that scripture. Anybody look at a piece of silver and try to figure out how much it weighs because of what it needs to endure for something to stand on for his presence to be able to get into? No.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I have it. So, but here's the thing. What have we dismissed if we are kings and priests?
Right.
You. We are learning about the tabernacle, so essentially I am teaching on you. All right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I said? All right. Obviously, the title tonight is The Tabernacle. the I am tonight is living with you. This is God is with us. What does that mean when we talk about Emmanuel? Emmanuel, God is with us. This is what that is. I think I'm just going to kind of go on to a couple things and then maybe we'll do the practical, and I hope you guys can follow my stuff. I want to remind us that the law, meaning the actual instructions which have not been given yet. We've gone over some of them, but they actually haven't been given yet. We've learned about some of them, but they haven't actually been given. And even when they were given just a couple Torah portions ago, I want us to remember that the law, even then, was not made for salvation. Because that's a huge thing. We don't need the law because the law will never save you. Well, the law was never made for salvation even then. They were already saved. All the instructions are is how to be sanctified, to press on, to purify, to be a set apart people, to walk with him and dwell with him. The instructions are for the ability to be able to dwell with him. It wasn't for salvation. They were already saved. They were already saved and delivered even. So it just makes me wonder, where did we get this? Never mind. It doesn't matter. They were already saved and delivered. So even then, the law was not for salvation.
That's good.
Okay? Okay. So I'm going to kind of... Psalm 91. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. I think what I wanted before I go into the details, because this is what I think is going to happen. We are going to look at this and be like, so you're saying I got to do all that. I got there's sacrifice and the bread and the veil, and I got to do all that to get to his presence. How dare he? I got to go. You mean to tell me he's going to separate himself? Now, granted, I understand we're probably saying, well, Yeshua made a way, and so he tore the veil, so we've got to come boldly before the throne of grace. Before we can claim that, let's understand some things. But my point is before we get into the concept of, you mean all this is going to, the outer court, like I'm way over here and he's over there, and he's gonna separate himself from his people if he loves us so much, and then we gotta go through all this, and then he's gonna hide himself over there and only one time a year. Before we think about all that, that is all true. There's absolutely a separation between unholy and holy. But before we go into all that, let me remind you that he chose to come off the mountain to be with you on your level. He's just saying there's some guidelines so that you don't die. Before we think about this and go, I can't believe the structure on earth is so hard. Don't forget he created a structure.
Right. That's good.
He could have stayed on the mountain and said, none of you have access, only Moshe.
Yep.
He said, I'm going to come from my place, from my high place, and I'm going to come down the mountain and I'm going to meet with you because I want to dwell with my people. That's his heart in the first place. Do you see how that happens even in earthly relationships? I can't believe you have all these, you know, boundaries and restrictions. I can't get behind your wall. I don't know if that. But I could have stayed in a place. I don't know if that makes sense on earth, but I'm just saying, like, even in earth relate, we can get it so twisted of like, I can't get to this person, and then realizing that you have that person in the first place because they could have been in a different place. I don't know if that's making sense. But I want to make sure that that is the foundation, because when we go through all of this, it can seem like he is really just saying, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. But he starts off with, I want to be with you. And I'm gonna come off the mountain to do it. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to move with you. They knew, and we know, he's everywhere.
He was creating a space that made it easy for man to be able to understand him and be with him.
Yeah.
He did that for you. So this is not a boundary and a restriction against you. It's for you because he was already dwelling with them, but cloud and the fire and his voice and all of that. They didn't need that, but he knew that they did.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just want that to be the foundation, because I know when we go through this, it could just be like, what is all of this? And just remembering that he wanted to be with his people. His heart is that we would have communion. He wants the creator and the creation to enjoy one another. His desire was that everyone would be able to understand his ways, not just the 70 that we just read about. And then take it a step further, what Yeshua did for us, which we're going to talk about tonight, allows all of us, not just the elders, to have the exact same thing. So I just want to put that in perspective. Okay, let's do the practical, and then I'll just see what happens. A couple people boxed me, which was super powerful. The first two sentences, I believe it is. Isn't it interesting that it says, I would like to take up an offering from anyone whose heart compels him. Oh, I thought the law like forced people. Even then, he was after a people that had it in their heart.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's just do the whiteboard. Are you guys doing okay?
Yeah, good.
Okay. All of you guys have seen I don't know where I'm supposed to stand. All of you guys have probably seen the tabernacle. I am definitely not a contractor. Tyler, don't judge. Even me trying to make a box, I was like, oh, that's way off. Okay, first of all, the word we can get into a word study, but the word tabernacle means to dwell. You're going to learn a lot. We've learned a lot in John where it says that the word became flesh, and it talks about how Emmanuel, God with us, tabernacled among us. I mean, all of this has to do with being able to dwell with man. Okay. I believe that this is not, again, it's not just a history story of some things that happened. This is a spiritual reality.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Made after the blueprint and pattern of heaven that is administrated on earth, and it is the person of Yeshua. Okay. We know that we have studied that Yeshua is described as the way, the truth, and the life. And we also know that Psalm says that Torah is the way, the truth, and the life. We know that Yeshua is the Torah. What the tabernacle is showing is there's three areas. In this Torah portion, it only talks about the holy place and the Holy of Holies. So look at it this way. This is just the holy place. This is the Holy of Holies. This whole thing would be the outer court. It's probably way larger over there because that's like where the sacrifices and stuff happen. But does that make sense? We're only focusing on the inner part. The inner part and the inner part. So in this Torah portion, we talk about the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant. We talk about the table of showbread and the menorah. And then we get into the structure, which is the walls. And I've got a whole another thing on the other side that we're going to kind of outline the structure and the curtains of the tabernacle. So this is just kind of the outline. That's what we went over tonight. That's what we were reading, right? Okay. So this is not in the Torah portion, but I'm just going to write it out. Because I think I did this right, in red is what I see. It doesn't matter. I was trying to make Yeshua in red, but so he is the door, right? He is the way. The only way in is through him. Okay? the table of showbread, he says, I am the bread of life.
Yeah.
This is, there's so much to this, but he, the bread and the before the presence of him and communion and the 12 tribes are represented, there is, this is what I was talking about where we have the 70 elders in communion. This is where we have access to communion with him before his presence. Then you have the menorah. He says, I am the light of the world. Then we have the veil. We have not discussed the veil. All those curtains that we were reading about is the coverings. Then we have the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is a box within the Holy of Holies. That box is holding the law or what's going to come, which is this is why this is so powerful. It hasn't even come yet, and he's already giving a mercy seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for anybody that's like, well, I thought the Father was trying to, mm-hmm. before the instructions are even given, he already gives the mercy seat to be able to go through the instruction. Mm-hmm. So the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat's on there, the cherubim, we see that he is, Yeshua is the mercy seat. Okay, so we have the way, the truth, and the life. Another a way that I saw it, oh, it's at the end of my notes. Justification, sanctification, purification. This is you. Good? So it's just kind of an outline of all the things that we talked about. Then, did I get all of that? You guys, my drawings are horrendous. No, that's not gonna work.
Absolutely.
Push it from the back. Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. The structure. Oh, sorry. Okay. The structure of the tabernacle. This is where I thought it got interesting, because I feel like we've all seen kind of the tabernacle, we understand the menorah, the showbread. I wanted to kind of go over the structure a little bit more so that as we go through and we read it, we kind of have more of a picture of what's happening here. First of all, now granted, this is just Googling and studying a little bit, so don't take my, like, this is exact, but some resources were saying that what it cost to all the offerings that came in then to be able to build the tabernacle, today's money would be $13 million. So when we talk about all hands on deck and the offerings that came in, this wasn't like, here, I've got some.
Yeah.
$13 million came in to be able to do this. And one thing that is so powerful about this is that you see the unity of the people. It's all the tribes. So just the joint instruction of the entire community coming together to get their hands on something to be able to build for him to dwell in. Does that not sound like what's coming?
Yeah.
Oh, an entire remnant coming together
that
is going to be able to build something for him to be able to come and dwell in.
Yeah.
We have some things to learn from our ancestors.
Yes.
Okay. So, are we doing okay? Is this okay to do this? I don't want to. If this, there's a lot of spiritual things we can get into if this is not necessarily beneficial. So I'm genuinely asking.
It's beneficial.
The structure, the outline of it is beneficial. Okay. So the two things I think in chapter 26 that we go over is curtains and frame. And at least for me, when I read curtains, I'm thinking I was reading the veil. I didn't necessarily understand which curtain. So it took me a while to kind of figure that out. So the curtains or the structure is the actual tent coverings over the whole tabernacle, not the outer court, but just the holy place. So that square that's on this side, all those coverings are just over that one area, the holy place and the Holy of Holies. Okay, I wish I had a pictures. There are four coverings over the tabernacle. You okay?
Should somebody go?
He's okay. So there's four coverings. The first one that we read about is the most inner one. So that means that this is the covering that they see from the inside. So it's super powerful when you read about the cherubim that have to be on this fine linen, because basically you can't see that unless you're on the inside. So again, I don't know. Just what is on my innermost side that, you know, like what's seen on the most inner side? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, sometimes we felt, I think that that's what that meant when Yeshua talks about like the outer looks good, but I care about the inner.
Yeah.
He layers it with badger skins. It ain't pretty. I don't care if you're pretty on the outside.
Yeah.
Because you might look like badger seal skins. With the, you know, the wool is all removed and it's fine leather because it's super functional. It's waterproof and durable. This is not what he sees from the inside.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the fine linen.
Yeah.
Okay. The fine linen, and there's three colors. Like I said, there's so much. So this is what it is. It's fine linen in strips like this. So envision 10 strips of fabric, really, really long, about 6 feet wide, and then what happens is they put the fabric together. It ends up coming to about 60 feet long. So crazy, because even in the instructions it says, and then there's one cubit left over. I'm like, I think the reason why I'm so in love with this is because it's freeing who I am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is just personal. Apostolic by nature, there is such a love for every step,
yeah,
every detail,
yeah,
every dynamic, every,
mm-hmm,
and for so long it was I didn't like that because the world was like, it shouldn't be so hard.
Yep.
You know, this is simple.
Yep.
Or you're too intense, or you're too emotional, or you're too much, or whatever the lies may be, started to slowly dim this appreciation,
yeah,
for the dang loophole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not loophole.
Yeah.
I didn't mean loophole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yes, I do have appreciation for loopholes, but I meant like the loops.
Yeah.
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 Like every golden loop,
yeah,
matters.
Yeah.
So, anyways. Just makes me excited. So there's 10 strips of linen. And then what he does is there's 5 strips together and 5 strips together. And then he teaches them how to create 50 loops and then 50 gold rings to attach the 5 and 5, where 2 become 1.
2 become 1.
And then 10 means something, and 5 means something, and blue means something,
yeah,
and cherubim means something.
Yeah.
What his home is, you guys, what his home is covered with is where 2 become 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Covenant.
Right.
And we think that replacement theology is going to, yeah, bring him forward. Well, actually, we don't even think it's going to bring him forward. It thinks it's going to take,
yeah,
us out.
Right.
Yeah.
We are all backwards.
Yeah.
Then the second layer is goat's hair. It would probably have been black. They were saying that it's like modern day felt. This is 5 and 6, same concept, strips that are just a little bit bigger than the other strips. 5 are together, 6 are together, and then the 50 loops are in the middle. Another thing you're going to notice is gold is first and then bronze. Do you guys know the prophecies in Daniel? If not, don't worry about it. Just guess it. These are, never mind, it just is awesome. Okay, so then you've got the bronze loops, and then the third one is ram skins, which is basically sheep. They took the wool off, it's like a fine leather. And then after that, the badger skins or the seal skins, which would have been a lot of the same, durable, water-resistant coverings, layered on top of each other. Does that make, so fine linen, so there's like 4 layers covering over this holy of holies and holy place. So you can imagine, I don't want to have to flip this over, but you can imagine that menorah. Because I would assume that inside that place, that is a dark place. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of layers and a lot of dark things, and it's all encompassing it. So then when you see the menorah that brings forth the light, and he says, I am the light, it's not just like on top of the electricity.
Yeah.
Like, he is the
light.
Yeah,
literally. Okay? Yeah.
All right. Good there?
Yeah.
Okay. The frame. You guys know how I am about numbers. Never mind. Yes, I will say that. Gematria, numbers, is biblical numerology. You guys know that I talk about numbers all the time. Numbers mean something. Clearly they mean something, because why does he have these numbers?
Right.
So my point is that the enemy always wants to come in and steal things, like,
yeah,
you're not supposed to look at astrology, and you're not supposed to look at numbers because that's New Age, and I'm just like, they took it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take something that's my creator's,
yeah,
and then tell me that I can't restore that or bring it back to its
right.
original intent. So I will look at the stars. I will look at the times and seasons. I will look at numbers.
Yeah.
Because he created them. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so the frame is made out of boards. They're all cubits wide. There's basically 20 boards, north, south, east, west. There's 8 and 20. This is so good when you learn this stuff, because when you get revelations, it's super fun. Like the east gate and all this stuff. Okay, so you have the, and again, we're not talking about the outer court. We're talking about the holy place and the holy of holies. So this structure is built up with boards, and the boards are then, my drawing. Basically, you see a lot of things coming together in unity to build something. It takes a lot of things, little things, to be able to come together to build something. So this would be a picture. I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this. This is going to be a, not a three-dimensional picture, but it's a picture of that board this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is that right? Make sense? Okay. So it's not three-dimensional because it's all 2D, but this wall is that wall. Just
okay.
Now we're looking at the side of it. Right now we're looking at the top down, so we're looking in, and I'm just saying, hey, this is 20 boards, this is 8. This is, now I'm at the side of the tabernacle looking this way. Okay, now you wouldn't see this because the coverings are over it. So all those boards are all covered because the ram skins and the seal skins are on the outside, down to the ground, so you don't see this. But basically, when it says 20 boards, this is 20 boards. Go ahead.
When you get inside, you can see that, right?
Yes.
There's not anything covering
that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're on the inside. You can see this. So you have 20 boards, and then it says that there are 5 loops. I drew 4 loops, and then acacia wood poles looped through the loops all the way across. That was going all the way across. Now, the reason why I have 4 loops is because one is invisible. So you have 4 on the outside, and then on the inside of it, there's one long loop that passes through all the way from one side to the end. That's the 5th loop all the way in the middle. So you have both the visible and the invisible creating the structure of this place.
Okay.
Okay. Each board is on 2 stands of silver. The silver, one of the silver stands is 264 pounds.
Wow.
Each of those. And they all are encased in silver. And I wrote this here. We don't read about it yet, but bronze is up front. So again, the metals matter.
Yeah.
All of this stuff matters. So I just kind of wrote out some details on a couple things. Somewhat visual.
Yeah,
I should have gotten pictures and I could have clicked through some pictures. But obviously you can Google it. Google Tabernacle, Moshe's Tabernacle or Exodus Tabernacle, and just start to visualize what the tabernacle looked like, because once you see it, and it'll even like outline all the different areas, then you can, when you go back and read about it, then you're, at least for me, then you kind of have a picture of what it is that's being said.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. See, now I just have all these notes and I don't know what we're going to do. I think going back, that the purpose of all this, let me put the tabernacle back You guys good with the frame and?
Yes.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't know about that. What I see in this is that they created a place for him to come dwell. They didn't create a place for them to leave. So again, it's that whole concept of one day we'll go, and yet one day he says I'll come.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone gave their best. They didn't give leftovers. One of the things that, you guys, I'm not sure how to do this. I want us to understand part of what this does for us is it helps us. I'm going to go back to the word to know your place, because it helps us to understand that if he says the earth is my footstool.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
The earth is my footstool, and yet I choose to dwell among them. Then to be a holy people, then there's this recognition to know my place, that there's no good thing in me.
Yeah.
There's no good thing in me. Because it says that you want to worship in spirit and in truth. So to be contrite and humble, that and the word says that you would tremble at my word. That word tremble doesn't mean awe of, that means fear.
Yeah.
There is a to be contrite and humble in spirit. And to tremble at his word, it's understanding who he is and who I am and what he's given us access to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something humble, there's something extremely humbling about him saying that he wants to dwell. And yet, we say that that's humbling because Yeshua came to dwell. But because we've dumbed down, I believe, Yeshua as this buddy old pal,
yeah.
We forget who is Yeshua.
Yeah.
He is him.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if I'm humbled by him, his presence being in a tabernacle, then I should be that much more humbled that he embodied himself in a tabernacle of flesh to walk on this earth.
Yeah.
I'll get into it now, but even acacia wood being gold. Wood stands for humanity. Wood means it's the human aspect. The gold is divine or deity. So he's already representing fully man, fully God in the structure of a lot of this, the structure of the outside of it, the Ark of the Covenant for sure. So the acacia wood, and acacia wood is crazy too when you look into that, because it's very durable. It can't be eaten by insects. Like it's very durable, and then it's got the gold around it. So he's already showing who Yeshua is in the Ark of the Covenant by just saying use acacia wood and dip it in gold. I don't know why I have this written down. I think it was a scripture, but I was talking about what I have written down is the law of love and forgiveness, refraining from evil speech, remaining faithful. Right? It's like when you read these things and then you apply it to, oh, you want me to worship? Like, what does that mean? Worship in spirit and in truth.
Yeah.
You know, and so anyways, when you apply it, it gives you a blueprint of what that means instead of like, I'll try to be in truth tonight.
Yeah.
Or I'll try to, you know, so. Okay. The Hebrew word for tabernacle is Mishkan. It's where Regina got Mishka. I mean, she didn't know that's where she got it, but. She just heard Mishka, and then she saw that, that it meant tabernacle or to dwell. Okay. All right, so I already kind of went over this, so now I'm just going to kind of go through each of the things that I have written down, and then we'll get into a couple of words, and then I think we might be good. So the ark is made out of acacia wood. Like I said, strength, durability. The gold is pure. The rings and the poles were for mobility. The covering of the ark is called the mercy seat. Now, this is what is so amazing if you get into this, because when you read mercy seat, that's English. The Hebraic, I'm going to say it wrong, but kaporet, I don't know. The word itself means to wipe clean. Now, I'm not sure if I'll know how to necessarily teach this, but one of the things that's amazing about this is there's a Hebrew idiom in that, because it's the same word that's used when Jacob is trying to win over Esau with gifts. So there's things that have happened in the Torah portion that when you know the Hebraic, it kind of leads you into what it is that he's saying. Romans 3:25 actually says mercy seat in the Greek, talking about Yeshua. It's when it talks about him being a propitiation. However, that word is not a good word. Because when you look up that word, it basically means appeasing an angry one, and that's not what that word means. It basically, what's happening at the mercy seat with the cherubim over it is that they're looking down, and what they see is the blood. And when they see that, it gives him notice, my mercy can be applied. So it's like a life for a life. That the blood is satisfied in that place. Okay. This is a cool thing. We've actually read about cherubim before in Genesis 3. They're the ones that guard the tree of life. So there are different, I'm not going to get into it, but there are different ranks and different types of angels. Cherubim specifically are called to guard. There's also a fire that comes with them. So that's just an awesome thing to think about, what it is that they're guarding. If they guarded the tree of life, when the whole thing that started it was to, he had to take them away from the tree of life, and what it is that they're guarding, and then what we have access to through this answer. Cherubim are good guards. If you approach in any unworthy way, they will kill you with fire. So that is, there's an order and a pattern, you know, with that as well. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians 4:6. I'm not gonna have time to get into all this stuff, so I'm just kind of spurting some like lines out for you guys. You guys write it down, and then you'll have to just dig into it. But basically, Paul talks about how Moshe is a parallel to Yeshua. So we know that the priestly instructions that are going to come are given to the Levitical line. So Aaron is the priest that does all of this. But Moshe does get into the presence. And it happens later, and it's happened before. He continually is going before the presence. Well, Moshe is not of the Levitical priesthood. So you see already, before the Levitical priesthood comes into play, you already have outside the Levitical priesthood having access to his instructions and to his presence. Moshe is a parallel to Yeshua, and Paul talks about that in 2 Corinthians. Okay? Moshe is given access to this by direct appointment from God, which is who Yeshua gets. And again, I've already said this, but he hasn't gotten the law yet. At this point in the scripture, which is kind of confusing because it's written for us.
Yeah.
Right. But at the time, it wasn't. So at this point, it's all oral. He's been telling all of them what's happening. It will be written for the future generations to follow. But this is what is so powerful about this. This is a place where God and Israel could meet. It's a dwelling place. God's holiness is unblemished, where atonement was made for sins. I kind of already talked about this, but this is what my notes say. Mount Sinai to the people. he comes down. One thing I want us to understand is that we tend to work from the outside in, right, when we're trying to get to him. But he always works from the inside out. Did you notice in the scriptures that we started with the Ark of the Covenant? He didn't start with the outer borders. He didn't start with anything. He came off the mountain and went straight for the inner. So be thinking about his character and his nature. He is, and because he does that with us. He is working from the inside out. He is not working from the outside in. In you, to build the tabernacle for him to dwell in, he is going to work from the inside out. Okay? The table of bread of presence is the meal. It's where we break bread. The altar of incense, sweet smelling aroma. I don't think we've read about that yet. The golden menorah, fire, light of the world. Okay. Now in my notes, we're at chapter 25, which is the beginning, and I'm just going to kind of go through a couple things, see what comes out, and then I feel like there's words at the end that I want to be able to release. Are you guys doing okay?
Yeah.
I know it's kind of
it's good.
Teachy. The first dwelling is not permanent. And neither are you. Meaning, like, you're movable. So the Ark of the Covenant is the most important thing. It's basically a box. I don't necessarily want to give out measurements because you guys can look all this up, but just for kind of some, that is about, I'm totally going to over, it's 4 by 2. It's like 3 feet 9 inches and 2 feet 3 inches. That's the Ark of the Covenant. The showbread table is just slightly smaller. So just to kind of give some perspective on that. The rings and the poles, that was the only source of contact to the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant carries the tablets are going to be in there. Later on, there's going to be a couple other things. Remember when it said a while ago to keep the manna? That ends up being in the Ark of the Covenant. The mercy seat is the lid. Now, for anybody that has the question, well, how come we can make golden cherubims? They're not worshipped. So that's a difference. Angels are not worshipped, but angels are not, what am I trying to say? I don't know what I'm trying to say. They're good, right? So that there's a difference between the two cherubim on top of the mercy seat, because those are not worshipped. Those are not the same thing as making a golden calf. Because making a golden calf or making an idol that gets worshipped and replaces God is completely right. Different than honoring the angelic that are absolutely a part of his kingdom. Okay. So I don't know why this in Romans 3:25 where it says Yeshua is our mercy seat. Again, you read that, or propitiation for our sins. And I don't know if we have an understanding of that scripture if we don't understand the mercy seat. Right? I mean, just arc for a second. I mean, how many times have I read, he's the propitiation of our sins? And again, that word's not a great word because it doesn't really correlate with the actual, it is supposed to, but that's not the best word for it. But just thinking about then now what the Ark of the Covenant's carrying, what all of this means, and him being the mercy seat, you learn about who he is in all of these things. All right. The table of showbread, there's 12 loaves. It's called the bread of faces, eaten before the face of God. It's communion and being with him, fellowship. It would be like saying that our communion with him is as necessary as food. Mm-hmm. That what is necessary for us, that our fellowship with him is as necessary. I guess at the end, at the foundation of all of this, he does not want to be separated.
Right.
He did not create humanity for separation.
Yep.
He created you in his image and for divine union with him. So everything we've seen since Genesis is his heart to go back or to fix or to bring back what was taken from him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times it's like, oh, he's punishing me. No, he's trying to get you back to what, to reverse what happened in the first place. But because we forgot what happened in the first place, we just say that everything that he's doing, like wiping out all of the earth, oh, that mean God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You forget that we were cast out of paradise.
Right.
So instead of focusing on what he's taking away, wipe out earth over and over and over again. If you taste the original intent and what paradise is, whatever it takes, take me back. That's what it's for. But we'll focus on the moment and not realize what he's taking us back to, that he wants us back in face-to-face fellowship. Each tribe of Israel was represented with the 12. It was making me think about even just the intentionality of the people, because I was reading about how the table of showbread always had to be fresh. So once a week, the bread was always changed out, and the priests usually were the ones that could eat the older bread. But I just was thinking, I wonder who made the bread. I don't know. Just thinking about the intentionality of the community. You know, sometimes you think like, well, who put the communion bread on the table, and who lit the candles, and who hosted, and and who, you know? Everything had a crown. All tables put a crown around it. He didn't want us to not forget his royalty. Put a crown on it. Put a crown on it. That's why I feel like he's like, put a diamond on. I'm like, okay. Everything had a crown. The lampstand, the menorah. Revelations 4:5, you read about it. Man, let me say this. You don't understand that menorah, then you don't understand the light of the world that walked on this earth. You are not going to understand Revelations when you see that light. Or if you don't know the seven spirits. And it's all right if you don't. I mean, we're just trying to learn how to build a relationship, reestablish a relationship with Yahweh. So I understand I'm throwing a lot at you. Like, I'm just trying to learn Yahweh. And then I'm telling you what, you get reintroduced to the Father, you were going to see the Son in a whole new light. You're like, I did not know you came from that. So you're going to relearn the Son, and then all of a sudden you're going to learn, you're going to understand Ruach a whole lot more because you're going through this whole thing, and you're going to like really appreciate that part. And then all of a sudden he opens you up to, oh, there is a whole lot to your kingdom. All right, there's a source of light. This is a representative victory. All right, chapter 26. Sorry, I'm going through. I think we're doing okay. The curtains, I think I already talked about this. 5 couples, 50 clasps, gold, goat's hair. Just making sure I didn't miss anything awesome. I told you guys the goat's one was longer, and you guys, even in the scriptures, it talks about how it hangs over the back. It even talks about like how many feet. I'm just like, all right. Oh, well, I'll get to that with the framing. The boards were about 15 feet high. So just for kind of for perspective, if you were standing in there, well, for me, I'd be like double me. Triple me. That is a tall wall. Wow. All right. Remember my not three-dimensional, but the board or whatever? It was sitting on the two silver. Silver represents redemption. It also represents what he got sold for. Mm-hmm. two becoming one, each board on two, not to mention that the foundation is trying to separate you from the dirt. Because it's like two metal, it wasn't, you know, it was two metal, two silver, I don't even know what you call it, chunks of whatever that the board sat on. And so it's lifted, it was lifted up above above the dirt. So just even the foundation, you can, and maybe this is, I don't know what it is, but I think it's fun. Looking for him in everything.
Yeah.
Looking for him in everything, because why not?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, even when you're just like, well, what is with the, what's with the, I mean, seriously, you just read anything. What is with the two branches? And then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I think I remember the two branches. Right. So you just start to go through each thing and everything, the word starts to make, like what Justin was saying to you, Dwayne, the word all of a sudden will just, and it might not be all of a sudden in a moment, but there'll be these things that just light up and be like, I never knew that before. I completely didn't understand or appreciate or even know what the heck Yeshua was talking about. I just thought he was a cool preacher. He, I was going to say he wasn't, but I mean, we're not.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to impress anyone. He's trying to point you to the Father. Yeah. He just repeated Torah.
Yeah.
The only reason why, never mind. All right, bars, linking. Let's see, what else do I have? Joined by a system of tabs and rings, each board rested on a base. Its foundation is the redeeming work of Yeshua. Separated from the word. Four horizontal bars, one middle bar, visible and invisible, talking about the unity. To me, I saw heaven and earth is what holds up the structure. You need both heaven and earth to hold up the structure. And there is repetition of that phrase that says, make this according to my pattern. So let me make this very practical. Tomorrow morning, which by the way, Sarah, thank you for the tallit. In the morning, I want you to just ask. There's a pattern for the next 24 hours. I'm going to get really crazy on you guys. There's 24 elders. Right. It's 24 elders that are circled around the throne. So there are 24 elders that are constantly around his throne. So they probably know some things. And there's 24 hours. There are some things that the throne has for you every single hour of the day. There is a pattern in heaven, and you can access it. So just tomorrow, I want to see your pattern, and then repeat that scripture. Let me find it. See that you make your day according to the pattern being shown to you. See that you make your day according to the pattern that's being shown to you. So if you're walking around aimlessly, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my day. Even if that comes in, stop. There's a pattern for 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
What's the pattern? And build it. Even if he just gives you a golden ring and you're like, I don't even know what that means. It's a golden ring. Go ahead.
What was that verse?
Well, the verse repeats several times. The one I just read was 25, 30, 40. He says it three different times, I think. He's saying to us, make me a place that so that I can live with you. So what I'm saying is that next hour, make a place for him to come.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Here are some of the releasing words. Oh, there's a lot of releasing words. there's a curse that happens in Genesis, and it talks about, I'm going to put iniquity between. What I want us to grab a hold of, we've talked about it a lot tonight, about the intentions and the details. Satan twists the word of God. So the moment that we think, what does it matter? 5 rings, 6 rings, 5 curtains, 10 curtains. That is the enemy saying, did God say?
Yeah.
Causing iniquity to twist the word of God. Because then when the word gets twisted, you get twisted. That's why he says, follow the straight and narrow. You know, we talk about the guardrails or the straight and narrow. You can't have a straight and narrow without details.
Yeah.
We know now that Satan is in the wide open places.
Yeah. Right.
So the 10 curtains versus 9 curtains matters.
Yeah.
Because Satan's in the wide open places. Right. And Yahweh is in the details.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
What's the opposite of details? What would
ambiguity.
Be ambiguity. Yeah. Satan is in ambiguity.
Yeah.
Yahweh is in the details.
Yeah.
So we twist the word the moment we say that those details don't matter. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very specific. See God in everything. I don't even know how I would repeat this, but I was like, I think Kaya might have been in the office with me, and I just was getting all fired up. But I was reading something or listening to something, and it was talking about how God is everywhere, but only if you're a, how did he say it? Basically, the whole concept was that God is everywhere, but it's when we're unaware and don't take our shoes off that we don't notice that he's there. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
My point is the honor,
right,
and what it is that he's restoring back to the pattern is that what we've done is I know I've said this, but kind of just, and we talked about it last week with relationship, but this whole buddy old pal thing.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that then we forget that his presence, because that honor's not there, then we're missing that he is, like, he is everywhere, but to be able to honor that it's there, we've talked about that shoes off moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's shifting into that something's there.
Yeah.
And being able to understand that. I don't know if I'm I don't know if I know how to explain what it is that I'm feeling like when I talk about like a shoes off moment. It just makes me wonder. I was thinking about this. I'm like, even if they built like a I don't know if this is going to make sense, but I was just thinking about how, like, they have, like, the ark, like, built, like, a life, you know, like, if they had this built, like, I don't even know if I could make it to the outer court without just, I don't even know. Like, when I learn about all this stuff and how everything meant, and then to think that what he said was built and the set-apart people, I don't know. I mean, even just when you start like learning more, I mean, even to kind of backtrack and talk about the laws and stuff, this wasn't abnormal for the ancient East to have laws. That none of that was abnormal. There's codes. And if you look up Mesopotamia, you look up the codes, that you actually see a lot of similarities between the codes. And what's crazy is when you start to study, like, you know, because we'll just think that this is it. And so then we think, well, this is crazy. Everything that he outlined wasn't abnormal for that time, but when you see the difference between the code, there was not one deity that ever wanted to dwell with their people. There was never that a deity that ever gave the law to begin with. It was always a king over the people.
Yeah.
So, and then they, one of the biggest differences between this law and all the other codes that were going on in the nations around them, did not honor women and did not honor, widows and did not honor the babies and life. And so it's like when you know, how much judgment has come on that and then realizing what he was doing in comparison to the world, and what he stood for, I don't know. One of the words that I had on here is to kind of like what I've released about falling in love with the word, is that knowledge is not going to keep you in the game. But being madly in love with his ways will.
Yeah.
And when I say fall in love with the word, that doesn't mean I'm talking about knowledge. Because right. He became the word.
Right.
Okay, here's a good one. So we know, or I've said, that Yeshua is the mercy seat. He is the ark. Well, the priests would go in, and remember how I said that the cherubim would look over the ark, and they would see the blood. Well, what I was learning this past week, which I did not know, that the priests specifically would sprinkle the blood on the mercy seat 7 times. So, I'm going to read this. Well, let me backtrack. When Yeshua was put in the tomb, look at the tomb as the Holy of Holies, the rock being the veil. The slab that he laid on was the mercy seat. We all know that there had to have been blood on that mercy seat. And then count the wounds, the crown, both wrists, both feet, back, and the spear. So just even learning 7 sprinkles of blood and what it was that he went through, you understand what was happening then. I think if we could flip our mindset to, well, the blood had to atone for an angry God. But if the Bible never says that he's angry, where did we get that? It doesn't say that he's angry. It says that he so loved the world that he gave.
Yeah, yeah.
So then what was atonement then? Like, these are just the remnant of deep-rooted lies of what we believe about him. Because it's a mercy seat. Mm-hmm. And it's a system to bring you back into your original intent and to teach you how to smell like him and be like him and to dwell with him and to dine with him. I'm trying to think if I want to teach on the feast a little bit. Because I want us to understand a little bit about when that happened once a year, okay, when that happened, when the priest went in once a year, happened on Yom Kippur. Do we know this?
No.
Okay. When the priest went in, it happened on Yom Kippur. That's atonement. That atonement was for a nation. That's why Yeshua did not die on Yom Kippur. He died on Passover because it was personal. Pair that with the word I said last week. Meaning individually you had access to the standard.
Right.
I'm not going back on what I said. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it was on Passover for your deliverance.
Yeah.
But Yom Kippur is for the nation. That's why it's still prophetic. So he delivered us, but then when we celebrate Tabernacles, Yom Kippur, I'm going backwards, Tabernacles, Yom Kippur, and Yom Teruah, we're that's still to come.
Yeah.
Because that atonement will be for the will be for everyone. Does that make sense? That's why we cannot believe. Well, he did away.
Right.
Because there's not one death. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Or I should say one life. What's going to happen is what happened when he was birthed, just backwards. Mm-hmm. Just reverse it. My point is that still needs to happen. Is that making sense?
Yes.
So Passover is Yeshua's death. That's why it's not a replacement when we celebrate Yom Kippur,
right,
as if we're dismissing
right
what he already died for us.
Right.
Because atonement has not happened yet in, I guess, what you could call the final judgment or what's to come. Because that's for the that's for the nation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, when this system was put in place, it was not for eternal salvation.
Yeah.
To begin with. They were not trying to get eternal salvation when the priests came in. It was a removal of sins. Let me say this. This is good. When Passover happens, you're clean. When Passover, when you receive Christ in your heart, when you get saved, you're clean. You're in right standing.
Yeah.
But your guilt is not. So there's more.
Yeah.
I'm only bringing this up with the feast. Kind of another whole thing, but it has a lot to do with trying to understand what this is, because then we'll understand the sacrificial system, what he did, but also that we can't just stop at the cross and say it's done, because there's more. So the best way that I can explain it is you are in right standing, but you can still struggle with the consequences of sin or guilt or all of those things, because there's more to the story, which is pressing on beyond salvation and into justification, into purification, and becoming one and being in his presence and being a completely holy people. But what I am saying is that you don't need a mediator on earth to do that, because through Yeshua, you are the temple. So you have access to do that now, but we have to understand what it is that we're doing so we don't get stuck.
That's good.
So you have access, but we'll be limited if the belief system, Satan, twist the word, say the details don't matter, and shut you down to not build the thing that's going to cause you to be a holy people.
Yeah.
What does he say? If you're seated at the right hand of the Father, you are a holy, you are a royal priesthood, a holy nation. You are set apart. What, Gabe?
When you say your guilt, are you mean like your guilty verdict?
Not the guilty verdict, but your guilt. You can be in right standing and still have guilt. Or another way to say it is you're in right standing and there's still earth. Just saying that there's more to this, which is why. Okay. Think about the feasts. The feasts are our blueprint, okay? Mm-hmm. Passover happened in Egypt, get delivered, we've got Shavuot, we've got the law, then we've got tabernacles. So it doesn't make sense to equate the sacrificial system and mix that up with Egypt. What happens to us as Christians is we stop at Egypt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You absolutely need Passover or you ain't getting out.
Right.
But once you get out, there's a tabernacle to be built so that you can be one with him to dwell in fellowship in his sanctuary.
Amen.
This is prophetic, and yet it's happened.
Yeah.
Just like the blood on the doorpost was history, was prophetic, and that has happened. There's still this.
That's good.
I just don't want us to be stuck in Egypt. That's the only reason I'm bringing that up. Okay.
This kind of goes back to one of the first things that I said, where I said, instead of thinking about all of this pattern and letting it feel like, well, because there's a pattern, I guess there's distance, or because there's a pattern or a blueprint or a way to do things, or the straight and narrow must mean that he's far off, but remembering that he's already, the pattern is what's causing closeness.
Yeah.
It was already far off. The pattern's not causing you to be far off. He was already far off. The pattern is a way and truth and life to have that life.
Right. Yeah.
The pattern is the way and the truth to have the life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we so easily say, but the way and the truth is annoying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So another way to say it is religion, the spirit of religion will apply to this, is going to make you think this is man, religion will make you think that this is man's way to get to God.
Mm-hmm.
But this picture to me is saying that Yeshua will be God's way to get to you. It's a complete flip. If you see this through the lens of religion, you're going to say that religion is man's way to get to God. Religion's going to tell you this is man's way to do it. I'm saying this is the blueprint and the pattern, that this is Yeshua's way to get to you. There was no way to get to you after Adam and Eve did what they did. There was no way until this. And I'm saying this is Yeshua, which is you. So if you look at you through the lens of religion, you're going to say all my works is my way to get to him, where what he's saying is you are the way to me.
Wow.
Yeshua will be his way to get to you. But he's in you, so that means you are to you. So that didn't make sense. It doesn't matter. You get in the spirit. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at this. Another way to look at this inside of you is basically God's internal navigation system. And if he is going to be an internal navigation system, which is that voice that you hear inside of you, he is not going to share with any other gods.
Yes.
You think any other gods are getting anywhere near this?
Yeah.
When we get into all of that stuff and all the priests. And then when you learn about what the priest had to do, and he says that you're a royal priesthood. If he's an internal navigation system, he is definitely not going to share that internal navigation system with any other god. Because he will not share himself. You guys should read some of my notes. I'm like, where was I? I don't know. I got audible voice on here. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. Okay. I'm going to leave you with this. I'm talking a lot about history. I'm talking a lot about now. And I'm also talking about what's to come. I'm talking about that internal navigation system, right? Remember last week when I drop that bomb about how he didn't die for you personally?
Yes.
He died for the same standard. Out of that standard grows a personal relationship, but the standard doesn't change. So what's so amazing about Torah, because he is Torah, is that internal navigation system. You're not tossed to and fro by like some thoughts you might have. The more you learn the standard, the more you're within the curtains, the rings, the ram skin, you're on your way to his holy presence. You're not trying to figure it out in this wide open space. So I think about the things about how the Torah taught how to treat people. So you think about those things. That internal navigation system. If he is the Torah, then what's inside of you and what's been written on your heart is how to walk like him and how to, just for example, how to treat people. So I don't know what I'm trying to say, but what's coming is tribulation. So that audible voice is what is going to navigate us through what's coming. I don't know if I know how to relay what I want to say. Emmanuel, God with us. Foundationally, God's with you, then you are never alone. What all this is for is that you would never be alone. So that internal navigation system, or him being inside of you, is divine union with him of never being alone. His heart is for fellowship. His heart is for communion. His heart is, and I guess I'm bringing it back to the Torah, because that's why he teaches us how to treat people, because he cares about, it's all about covenant and what births out of covenant, which is relationship and strong ones. Not the other way around. Perfect example. Not the other way around. You don't build a relationship, right? I mean, in the practical, not in covenant yet, but the purpose is the covenant goal, and that standard is what's building the relationship. Not sex.
Yeah.
Not infatuation.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. Straight up compatibility. Did God say or not?
Yeah.
Right? It's standard. What's the standard? Yeah. You know how many years are going to be stripped off of their lives of having to figure out what the standard is?
Yeah. Yeah.
When the standard's just, this is the standard.
Yeah.
This is how we walk. This is what, you know, what, and then from there, strong relationship builds from that standard. So I'm bringing it back to the Torah, because the Torah is in us. So he's teaching us how to be with people, and yet his whole focus is for us to be a holy people so he can be with us. It still comes back to him fellowshipping and being with us. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I want to just get across the opposite of what we may see with this. And even just... Well, let me just simplify this. Anybody who's standing over here who says, well, I deserve to be over there and I don't understand why there's anything in between, you better believe Yeshua is between you and that Father, because you will never get to him without him, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you will learn about Yeshua, who is the light of the world. You will learn about the door. You will learn about the bread of life. You will learn about his sacrifice and the sweet aroma that ain't yours.
Yeah.
You're going to learn about the veil that he tore. You're going to learn about what is the Ark of the Covenant, who's sitting on the Ark of the Covenant. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
So when, if religion says, well, why is he so separated? holy and unholy is always going to be separated. Right. Don't get entitled and weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
But because of his son, he gave us access to be able to have that. So we don't want to put the lens of religion on Yeshua. Well, why are you making me go through all these things when he says only through me? But through him is not a wide open place. That's why he says drop your stuff and follow. Amen? Okay. All right. I apologize for tonight. I mean for how... Well, I just... Zing, zing, zing. That's just what I was. I feel like we were like, and then here, and then what about this, and then here. So, anyways.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I massively appreciate somebody who is, like, massively detail-oriented, teaching us about this. Because one thing that stuck out to me that she said is, you begin to understand how Yahweh is when you're detail oriented. And she just broke down all of this in as much detail as humanly possible in a few hours. And all of a sudden now there's a depth of understanding that this isn't an obstacle for us to get to him. This is a way for him to get to us.
Yeah.
Right? And so I just want to, like, I'm taking it as a challenge to be detail. There are some areas of my life where I'm detail oriented, and there are others where I'm not. And I feel like if your relationship to the Word is not an area where you're detail oriented, I feel like what she released tonight is just going to show that if you're not detail oriented in the Word, then you're missing out on how Yahweh is in a relationship with him. You don't understand, or you can't understand how he is. And if you're not, it's like mind-blowing to me, because if you don't understand the details and you don't understand how he is, then you're left with the letter of the law, which is actually legalism. Like, that's actually religious. And the people that are in that place that set the details aside, that don't understand how he is
legal.
Those are the people that are accusing the people that are getting into the details of being legalistic. When you're actually understanding the spirit of the law.
Take that. Take that, Satan.
I don't know how many times that we... She just ordered a bookshelf off of Amazon. Comes with 1,000 pieces. I cannot just take the pieces and start putting stuff together. I used to do that because I'm like, I could figure this out. And I start putting it together, and then all of a sudden I get to the last piece and like there's 5 boards with the holes on the wrong side and I can't finish it. Because I didn't get in the details, right? Or when I was an officer, I get a logbook. Well, I can just read it and just try to apply it, but if I don't understand the details of how things work, then I don't understand the nuance of the spirit of the law to be able to make a decision.
You can't apply it.
So if I don't get in the details of that and learn how to apply it, I'm simply going to hammer people with the law. Right? But that is just mind-blowing to me how backwards everything is.
I love how much you free me.
And this is amazing.
Was
because
that good? That was good.
When people say that, no, what everything you said was good. When the people say the devil's in the details, I feel like what you were trying to say is it dismisses people who are so detail oriented and so in love with the detail. I'm glad you were teaching this one, because I would have brought you guys like, like, I'm detail-oriented, but for somebody who loves that and is passionate about it, it just challenges me that let me say it this way. This is another element that we're adding to our household identity, because it's his identity, that we are detail-oriented with most things we should be, but first and foremost, we should be absolutely detail-oriented with His Word. And we can no longer set those things aside, because how much more understanding do we have of Yeshua when we understand the tabernacle?
Yeah.
How that this is the danger of when you set things aside and you're not detail-oriented, that you are in danger of meeting Him and Him saying, "Who are you?"
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. To me, that's what hits me about this. So, Amber, you can come on up, and but I just want to challenge us. Like, just how many people, by show of hands, would you consider yourself not detail oriented with the Word?
Wait, what was the question?
How many of us would how many of us are not, after hearing all this, as detail oriented with the Word as what we just gained tonight? So the challenge then for the family is, as understanding that this is a part of our identity and character that we're discovering now, that we need to be detail oriented.
Yeah.
We can no longer, after tonight, we can't just say whatever the patterns are, whatever the protocols are, like, just like she said, I just have a straight shortcut to the mercy seat, and I can just bypass all this. We can't do that, right? So I think it's a big thing for us to receive that unlocking of our DNA and who we are, that we are detail oriented about the Word.
I wanted to go all the way back to the beginning of when, at the beginning of the Torah portion, when it was talking about from anyone whose heart compels them. I don't know about any of you guys, but I feel like I got stuck there when I was first reading it. Like when Mom was saying at the beginning, like, there was an opportunity, it was an invitation to respond. And I'm just thinking, like, If we, like, I'm trying to put myself in that place of thinking, would I have responded to give my best and to give everything that I could, and maybe not even knowing what was gonna be built? Like, I'm not Moshe, so I might not have known what's to come, but could I submit not knowing that that was around the corner?
Right.
And can you think about, like, the opportunity that would be missed if we didn't? So it's the same invitation, I feel like, to, for every time, to continue to extend our best, our first, not the leftovers. Each time you have an opportunity to sow into something, and thinking about, like, what am I not seeing the fullness of what could be around the corner when I'm not sowing into that. And so with that, I was thinking, like, for those that didn't, what did that then look like? Like, was that an easy way out? Like, if Yahweh were to say, like, I need you to give your best now, would we respond with something as simple as tithes and offerings? Or do we take the opportunity to not have to? Or, like, even just asking ourselves the question of, do we want to? Do we want to give our best? Do we want to sow the into the fullness of that?
Can I add a detail to that?
Yeah.
It was making me think, sorry, I'll talk really loud. It was making me think, if I gave, I don't know why I had this vision of, like, what I would do. I don't want to flip this over, but if I just got to grab, like, the fifth silver stand, like, on the boards, you know, like, just the silver foundation, like, if I could just, like, wrap my arms around it, what does that mean? So it's just making me think of what they gave into when they saw what was built.
Yeah.
Like, what meaning, what you pour into isn't building a vision of someone else's.
Right.
It's a part of something. So like whatever you put into might be this corner piece, but after what I just released, that corner piece means something.
Right.
It wasn't just so that it could build something, but if every part, what if it was one of the showbread stands?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like every aspect meant something and it pointed to Yeshua. So what's being built is a part of what he is in what's to come.
Yep.
So it's not just, practically, the menorah light will keep going. We talked about that. Like, we need to pay the bill, the electric. It's not that, but it's just making me wonder. Yeah, it is a light. But what light am I pouring into of what's to come? That's him.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just when you were talking about that, I was like making me think of that one piece.
Yeah, that's crazy. And to see the ownership, because you can imagine bringing in fabric.
Yeah.
And then seeing your fabric on the wall and being like, that was, like, that's me, and I get to be a part of this.
Right.
And thinking just how humble that is. Mm-hmm. But again, like, looking at, like, do we take the opportunity to not respond when there's an invitation or when there's an opportunity to step into something? But I mean, even practically, like, say you didn't, like, you're still going to want the fruit of that. So then what happens when you're standing outside? Like, you're going to have to deal with the guilt at the door. Before you walk in, you're going to, like, you can't get to the fruit without dealing with yourself first. You have to go through the process to get there, right?
Yeah.
So just thinking about, like, you can't get to the fruit without sowing in and doing the work to get there. Without dying to self to get to a point where you can freely receive. Go ahead, Mom.
This is making me think about, not that this happens here. I'm totally going old school, but why do they always have to talk about money?
Yeah.
Moshe.
Get it.
Tell B'nai Israel to take up an offering for me.
Yeah.
Somebody got to say something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not for Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the people.
Mm-hmm.
For Yahweh.
Yeah.
From anyone whose heart compels him. I don't know. I didn't plan on all that, but I was just thinking, like, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, how many, like, that just that feeling that I'm sure maybe you don't. Amber probably thinks, oh, it's my turn. I don't know if you feel like that. Well, that was a good word, but now I got to talk about finances. Womp womp. We should have shifted it and followed the Spirit, because in this Torah portion, it did it first.
Yeah.
Missed that one. Sorry, guys. Could have flowed on that one. That would have been cool.
That's all right.
For next 3 years. For the next, the next year. Sorry. I'll stop.
No, it's good. So just practically thinking about that, like when it's something as simple and it can be familiar as a routine thing of sewing into tithes and offerings, seeing that bigger picture of like, and even asking him, like, what is this unto? What piece am I giving of myself that is for something greater, for access for everyone, but also personal?
Mm-hmm.
And just asking what that would look like. Dad, the bucket's actually right next to you. You can pass that to Zoe. So we'll pass that around. And one thing I just wanted to express is if you guys saw, we don't have communion out tonight. There's a little bit of a shift with that, and I just wanted to speak to that really quickly, because after this, we won't be going into communion. And part of the heart of that is just wanting to safeguard any level of familiarity. So when Mom's talking about, like, it's just humbling to think after all that perspective that he would take on this form, and how easy it can be to take something like communion and forget, like, what that means to eat of his flesh, and how easily we can forget what his blood fully represented. And so what we want to do is just be intentional to safeguard that. And so practically there's just going to be a little bit of a shift where we'll be doing that on the first fruits services, so the first of the month, whenever we shift. So you guys can be preparing for that, but also just to be preparing ourselves and mentally aware and continuing to be aware of his times that we know when that's coming.
Okay, guys, well, while we're still offering and responding, just to close our night, I think that a huge part, well, there's so much, because we continue to receive more and more of who he is. And when we do, what happens, or what should happen, is that it brings a clarity and an increase in your hunger, in our collective hunger as a family, to continue to make a way for more. So when I leave a night like tonight, where I have a deeper understanding of Yeshua, I have a deeper understanding of Yahweh, I have a deeper understanding of what all of this picture that we literally have on the board, what that means, it challenges anything in me that would say, not tonight, but I know when the intensity of the work comes, and it's when you're in those 24 hours and you're not surrounded here.
Yeah.
That's when it's easy to say, what does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
In this moment, it feels like, oh my gosh, this all matters. This all matters. But truthfully, really, how often do you say in your day-to-day, in your mind or out loud or whatever that looks like, or maybe it's not a literal thought you have, but it is making itself loud, that you would say, what does it matter? What does another conversation matter? What does another moment of processing through something matter? What does following this direction in this moment matter? What does holding on to a conviction that mattered on Friday night, or that mattered when the revelation hit me or whatever, but now in my 24 hours, or in the 16th hour of the day, or in this fourth hour of the day, it doesn't matter. In a moment, you can exchange what matters, because that's the level of lifestyle that covenant demands, that this requires, is that it all matters. Because the moment, what we heard, is the moment we say it doesn't, is when you allow that pattern of iniquity to come in and cause separation between, what did you just say?
Between
seeds. Knowing that the reason why he says it all matters, and he's giving you blueprint after blueprint after blueprint, and direction after direction after direction, and safeguarding after safeguarding, and literal physical presence, people in your life to remind you that it does matter in that fourth hour, or whatever it is, everything that you are given, that in those moments that you trade one seed for another, when the truth, I don't know how to describe this. The reason for all of that is because Yeshua, that is his way. I'm not just talking about Yeshua. I mean that all of those things are his way to get to you. So you're exchanging a moment, choosing this doesn't matter. This decision, this conversation, this follow through in a pattern or a behavior that he's asked me to change, this commitment, this promise, this word yeah. that I stood on,
yeah.
or a word that I gave a moment ago, all of a sudden doesn't matter for whatever our reasoning is, whatever my reasons are, when what he's trying to do is make his way to you.
Yeah.
So all of the work that's been done on your behalf,
yeah.
we always talk about our responsibility, because it is our responsibility to continue to say it matters.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's literally all we're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because he's the one making a way for you. And all he asks is that you value the way that's being made.
Yeah.
That you protect the way that's being made.
Yeah.
But he's the one that's making the way. You can't make a way.
Yeah.
At the same time, you can shut that door. And you can, like, I can see us stopping at all of these different, like, these different points in movement when he's just descended to dwell, and you're like, well, that mountain's really, it's going to take a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot of work for me to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather this.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather that. I would rather my time look like this. I don't know how to build up in us the tenacity or the endurance to be able to begin to recognize all of those moments, because I think there's just so much, because our lives have been so complacent and so far removed from all of this to where we would get to a point where we're able to even recognize, like, oh my gosh, I almost just said, what does it matter?
Yeah.
But that we can start to practice. I mean, it's what we've been doing, but sometimes when we're going through the steps of acquiring a new lifestyle, you don't make those connections, especially in the moments when it's hard for that to be your lifestyle. So do what you need to, set a reminder, make a note, put it on your phone, set a literal alarm clock. I don't know, something to remind you. How many times today have I literally said, or in the spirit, have I exchanged a seed for a seed, as Mom said, and said, what does it matter? What you've just prompted me, what the family is holding me accountable to, what you've asked of me. Everyone has a pit process, right? Like, we've talked about our going back to other things, like when in those moments, what does it matter?
Yep.
What does the way I parent today matter? What does, like, any of those things that he has brought clear direction to over and over again, it's for this. It's not, it's like everything that's being said about details. It's the same thing. What does it matter? What does having another, I don't know why I keep saying what does having another conversation matter. Maybe that's in me. I don't know. That I'm like working it out of me or something. There was a day for sure where I literally said, what does it matter? If we have to have another conversation in detail about this thing, While this is happening, or while he needs our attention here, and it was like he was trying to grind out of me, it all matters, and this is my way to ensure that you understand how to grant me permission to make a way to you, and to make a way to all of the people that you're saying you're broken on behalf of, and I'm telling you, sit in this chair and go over the details again and again and again. And when you feel like it's pointless, can I remind you again and again? And it wasn't till I got through all of those hard moments of like, what does it matter, to where all of a sudden it's like, it all matters. I understand. Because once you move through the what does it matter, it's like it breaks off, and all of a sudden, however that looks in your life, but all of a sudden you get to the other side where there's so much clarity like there is here, and all of the details and pieces that he's been sorting through or making you stare at, and you're like, I don't care. I feel like I don't care. I don't understand. This is pointless, or this is so like draining, or whatever it is. And all of a sudden it just, he was making a way.
Good. So good.
I have a title for the alarm clock.
Okay.
No. You're going to be proud of me,
Zoe. So when you set your alarm, this is what I heard in the spirit.
Well, I don't know why this is so good.
I don't know why this is
good. You guys, she said the way like 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's the way, not the moment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So don't exchange a moment.
Yes. Yeah.
For dismissing the way doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the title for your alarm clock is the way. Because, and then to think about all that, that's on the outside. That's just a way to get
yeah.
in. That's not even the details
yep.
yet.
Baby steps.
I don't know why that was wrecking me, but that's his name. He is the way. That means he is the walk. That means he is the action. That means he
yeah.
is beyond the moment. That's why it matters, because he's
yeah.
a way.
Yeah. yeah.
He's a way of doing things, not a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
is this just,
yeah.
Okay. You can't get the truth. Everybody says, I want truth. Is it truth? Is it not? Is it deception? Is it not? Is it this or is it? You can't even get there unless you're going the way.
Right.
So just walk the way and then you'll find truth.
Yeah.
It's everybody wants it backwards. Maybe if he proves that I have life,
yeah.
then maybe I'll
yeah.
walk the way. No. He's the way.
Yeah.
By nature, he's 24 hours. He's not a moment, he's 24 hours. And it was also making me think in the spirit, if you say in the fourth hour or whatever time you say, it doesn't matter, there's an elder listening who is standing before the throne. So
yes.
I'm talking to myself. I had a moment this morning at 5:30. I was trying to figure out what elder heard my cries. That was good. But she said it like 100 times. She kept saying the way. I mean, I feel like, Selah, we don't ever have to meet again. It's just the way.
Well, when you say it like that, we all get it and we're good now.
He's like, I'm the moment, the truth, and the life. Wow.
I got saved right now. My altar call just happened right now. Oh, wow. Was that a year ago? We were just following right all up into the life. Never mind. Just stop. I'm looking for someone to stop.
I think we just keep going. Okay.
You think you give us like, you're in the light as our name? No.
Broke it down very simple. You are following the way.
Amen. Well, Justin, we'll be in this for a while. So we're free. She'll be here.
I am. Oh, I don't know about you guys. I am.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.
Good night, guys. Hope you had fun.